Tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 444 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Hello.
So we were just talking briefly about the news right before we began recording, so let's get right into it. We do have some information about some upcoming lineup changes. Seda, you brought it to my attention, so why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, so this weekend, Dadadan is airing the last episode of season one. There is a season two, but we are not getting that in Tsunami right away. And so this weekend, we have a normal schedule, as it has been for the last couple of months, really. But then the weekend after, basically everything moves up. So Dragon Ball Daima is in the top slot. Bleach is now in the second slot. Blue Exorcist, Shimane Illuminati Saga is in the third slot. And then it's also in the fourth slot. So we're doubling up on Blue Exorcist, then One Piece, and then the rerun slot, which was Lazarus, which also finished, is now Dandadan. Mm-hmm. So basically, Dandadan is finished, or finishes this week, and then it'll move into the rerun slot, which seems, you know, that Tsunami does that. So, and then Naruto is still there at the end of the block. So we had speculated in previous weeks that or I did. I know other people thought similarly that we may not go into Dandadan season two right away. One, the Blu-ray doesn't exist yet, and that's the cut that we have right now. So necessarily, even if we were to get Dandadan, it would be like the TV edit version. But they probably have to negotiate that separately, and maybe it's just not done yet, or maybe they're waiting. Who knows? Anyways, the week after. So again, this weekend, the next upcoming schedule is the same. And then after that, the schedule I just mentioned with the double Blue Exorcist. And then after that, we have a marathon. It's an Uzumaki marathon, kind of in time for Halloween.
Yeah.
However, we still have, at the top of the block, this is like 3 weeks from now, Dragon Ball Daima and Bleach. So we're still getting those episodes. And then we do Uzumaki, 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 Uzumaki. So I hope that came through okay. So normal schedule, then double Blue Exorcist, then an Uzumaki marathon, but we still have Daima and Bleach.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on this really quickly. So the doubling up of the Shinemane Illuminati arc, Blue Exorcist episodes, that finishes that out, right?
No, there's still more afterwards.
There's still more after that? That's interesting to me. Okay. That they're doubling up on that, even though there's going to be more afterwards. Okay.
I think this Blue Exorcist Illuminati saga bleeds into season four. Like, the saga doesn't end with season three.
Okay.
It has a new name, I assume, right? That's my understanding.
I'm checking the Wikipedia now. I misspoke. And maybe it depends on where you look. So we are in season three of Blue Exorcist, which is the Shimane Illuminati saga. We are on episode, look at your notes here. We just watched episode seven, so we have five episodes left. And then season four, like part one, is just a reference. Season four, part one is called the Blue Knight Saga. This is a little confusing. I apologize.
Okay.
Season four, part one is Beyond the Snow. Season four, part two is the Blue Knight. So that's the name of the upcoming episodes that we may or may not get right away.
Yeah. Season four being in two cores is what you're saying.
Yes. It's two different sagas.
That finished all the adapted Blue Exorcist in anime form?
I think so. I heard that the reason why Blue Exorcist is slow is because it's a monthly manga, I guess. So, you know, it just takes longer for the manga to release and for the anime to have material to adapt. But yeah, if we have five episodes of Blue Exorcist left for this season, which is season three, so we'll have one episode this week, and then two episodes next week, and then the marathon. So we'll have two episodes left after the marathon, but we're close.
Yeah. But what we will be losing, like you said, is Dandadan. Now, I will be clear. We assume that we really don't know, but it's very likely they would run, unlikely they would run the rerun the first season while they're airing the second. I just don't see them doing that.
I don't think they've ever done that, anything like that before. So there's no precedence for Toonami.
Right. Exactly.
If they're doing a second season, they'd roll right into it in the premiere slot.
Getting close on Daima. That'll be done soon. Yeah. So in at least 2 to 3 weeks, we should know something about a new show coming, because there has to be something.
Yeah, Daima doesn't have that many episodes left. Blue Exorcist doesn't have that many episodes left. Don is going to finish up, so they can't just have three shows end.
Right
now, Blue Exorcist could very well go into the next season. Who knows? I mean, we went from 2 to 3 directly. Actually, we really went from 1 to 2 to 3 directly.
That's true.
Even though one was a kind of a revisit. We'll see. So.
Yep.
I mean, there won't be that much time left in the year. There won't be, like, when you take out, you know, holidays and whatnot. But I do still think they'll premiere something as opposed to tread water for, like, 4 to 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
I would say that there's a good chance that Bleach might take the start of the block while they do get something else.
It depends if they roll right into season 3 for Bleach, which they could do, or that's going to be a big, like, deciding factor what they do with Bleach, if they just roll in season 3 or not.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I mean, there's definitely just a lot of shakeups that are all about to happen at the same time. So, and the Uzumaki thing, there's nothing really to say there other than the only reason I think they're doing that is A, like they do sometimes to buy time, and B, because it is quote unquote, it's funny. You would consider that the weekend of Halloween, because Halloween actually takes place the day before the following Toonami.
Yeah.
So it's the last Toonami can air before Halloween. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though it's like,
although it's early, almost a whole week out, but still.
Yeah. But it would be weird to do it on November 1st.
Right.
You know,
exactly. So they're fitting it within October is what I think's going on there. All right. The only other piece of news we had was there was a video game review called for a game called Planet of Lana, which is one of those sort of 2D puzzle platforming games where you kind of move left to right. You have like a companion animal that helps you, has, platforming mechanics built into it and stuff like that. Anyone want to guess what the review was for that?
I have no idea.
I mean, score? Yeah, I can just take a look, shot in the dark.
You know what? Actually, let's not even say the score, because I think everyone would know what the score is anyway. So,
well, it is worth mentioning that I forget the developer and the publisher of this game. I'm aware of the game broadly, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you who made it or who published it. But I do know they recently announced a sequel or like a follow-up. So maybe that's why this is on the radar. Like, oh, here's a sequel. Let me play the original. So,
yeah. I think there's a lot of the review stuff here is just the Toonami guys just being like, I played this, so now I'm going to write a review about it.
Yep, which is fair enough.
That's perfectly fair. It's, good content. You know?
That's not a criticism. It just kind of sticks out like obvious to me now. That's like they review the games that they're playing, and it doesn't have to do with being super timely. So,
yep.
Okay, well, that's the news. Let's move on. We've got, a lot of shows to talk about tonight, so let's go right into Daima. Dragon Ball Daima, episode 16, Degasu, which actually doesn't really play that big a role in this episode. Kind of does, but he's kind of out of the picture at this point. So, quick rundown, Vegeta defeats the Ginyu Force. Does anyone have anything to say about this? I mean, it's just, that's what happened.
Oh, Timu Ginyu? Yeah. As you like to coin them.
Yeah, the Great Value Ginyu Force is defeated.
I will, to their credit, they're good sports about it. They don't whine, they don't fuss. They're like, yeah, you beat us, go on ahead, to their credit.
Yeah. And not a large portion of the episode was on that. It was just sort of like, oh, we got to get this done. Here's a joke. Here's Vegeta's going to school these guys. Now, this is where I was wrong. Sato was right. We cut to that woman, that Glind woman that we saw buying the belt earlier with the eye in it. and she's wandering around the palace looking for Degasu. So this isn't Degasu. This is actually someone else.
What prompted you to think it was Degasu? Just curious.
Well, because I'll tell you why. Because when she bought the belt from that guy, she had like an inner monologue line that you could hear. And then she's like, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I'm doing this. And I'm like, why would she say that? So I kind of thought maybe he was in disguise.
Well, you weren't the only one. I know other people in the thread mentioned that they were also they were confused originally when this first aired, that they thought it was Degasu. So it wasn't just you. Like, just the way that it was set up, you just maybe assume that they are doing like some sort of like cross-dressing gag or something, whatever.
Oh, magic or something. Yeah, I thought it was magic.
Just for the fun of it, or I didn't mean, I meant like just gender swap, just for fun or whatever. Like,
right. Yeah.
I was just curious because the thought never crossed my mind. So I was like, oh, why did other people think that?
And that's a good point. And I'll tell you what, in hindsight, I'm kind of like, why would he be in disguise anyway? I don't think this guy's ever seen him. So, but anyway. She turns out to be kind of a fun character. She's sort of like, I don't know, what would you describe her personality as? Like a valley girl or I don't know.
Kind of like valley girl, gold digger in a way. Gold digger. She just wants the reward.
Yeah.
So
she has a fun way of talking. But anyway, she's looking around for him. And then we see that the Z fighters have arrived at the front of the castle. They know that Dende's in there. I think they even spotted Degasu with Dende in the window. And so all of the powerful Z fighters go in, and everyone kind of stays back, except for Pansy, who they spot the people who stay back spot Pansy running in after them. Come back from the commercial break, and we see, yes, in fact, that Degasu is trying to steal Dende, but Dende's crying and stuff. They follow and they catch up with Dende, or I'm sorry, they catch up with Degasu and Dende, and they have a little moment here where I guess the two brothers are kind of like reuniting for the first time in 1,000 years, and they're like, give us Dende. And there's like a little brief skirmish. And then I guess Glorio had followed them in too now. Yep. And he's standing nearby and he throws Hybus's hat at Degasu. And it like, I guess, knocks him off guard or something. And then Pansy like swoops in and grabs Dende. So.
Yeah. Degasu did not put up much of a fight.
Those points weren't scheming rather than dexterity or strength.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the next time we see him, he's just being escorted away. Like, he's just captured. So, nothing more to him. Anyway, the girl catches up to where Goma is, and he's all freaking out. He's like, oh my god, you've got the belt. This is amazing, and this is amazing. And so, he's like super excited. And then we also see, meanwhile, that now that they have gotten Dende back, they're ready to go and try to get the last Dragon Ball, but that's when they walk outside the front of the castle and Arinsu and the two Majins are there. And she's like, you're going to have to battle for us. You know, you're going to have to fight us for it. So this is going to probably lead into the next episode where we got a Majin battle.
Yeah, they did get to the Tamagami, like the first Tamagami. But they noticed that the Dragon Ball wasn't in it or whatever. Like normally it's like embedded in the Tamagami, but it wasn't there. And then Arinsu showed up. So yeah, I mentioned on the previous episode, we had to get rid of the Ginyu Force. That was half an episode, if that. And now they got to take care of Arinsu. So yeah, That's this next episode.
Well, we're also going to get something else down the road after that, I think, because the final scene of this episode is a really fun sequence where Goma gets this girl to extract the eye, because he can't get the eye out of the belt. And it's like a long scene. I swear it goes on for like 3 or 4 minutes where Goma's just trying to get the eyeball out and he can't do it. It's very Looney Tunes. Anyway, he gets the girl to do it. She doesn't want to do it, but he's like, I'll pay you a bunch of money. And then she's like, give me more. And anyway,
you can have everything in the vault.
Oh yeah. She took a bunch of stuff. She's like, you said I could take whatever I want. Anyway, they get the eye out. He gets the eye. Oh, no, that's right. Goma gets the eye out using a plunger from the bathroom because he goes and takes a bathroom break. And then it's where he's like, gets the idea. It's like, oh, I'll use a plunger. He gets the plunger out, but he can't get the eye into his forehead. He needs someone to do that, I guess. So he gets her to do it. She doesn't want to touch it, but he bribes her. And then he sticks it in it, and then he transforms into a giant version of himself.
Yep. So he's the final boss, presumably.
Seems so.
And the girl, meanwhile, while he's like, you know, freaking out and starting to grow, she's just like, oh, I'm out of here with all of my backpack full of treasures and jewels.
There was a funny bit where she's like running away for her life and she drops like two jewels, and then like there's like a beat and then she comes back and snags them and then runs away.
That's what I would do. Go back for it. Worth it.
Yeah.
He's clearly not lucid right now.
So this is, yeah, I think, like I said, we're going to probably fight the Majins in the next episode, get the last Dragon Ball potentially, but then we got to deal with Goma, the super, super Goma.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts on this episode, Crocodile, anything?
I thought the humor for the most part worked. Not much more to say besides that.
Fair enough. Anything you got, Seda?
Yeah, it's a fun episode with like the random Majin girl. And, you know, the Ginyu Force, the Great Value Ginyu Force was just a joke the whole time. And that was kind of the point. Like, they were never a threat. They were never going to be a threat. They didn't even pretend to be one. So, like, okay, they were just silly the whole time.
Something I do wonder, and I don't think there's any way to answer this question, but, like, how much is it that they were always a joke, and how much of it is just power scaling? Or, like, if Goku and friends met them back when they met the original Ginyu Force, if they'd be threatening, and it's just now it's been, like, 10 plus years later and they had 500 transformations, or if they're like, no, they were always a joke. There's no way to answer that question, but it's something I'm curious about.
Yeah. So yeah, this episode didn't really have any like big memorable moments, and it kind of only barely moved the story forward. But you know, it was probably one of the weaker episodes of the show, to be honest, but it had some fun stuff in it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like the biggest thing that happened is they got Dende. So, and the transformation of Goma, that's like the two big takeaways, but, I like the girl. She's fun. She was more interesting, fun little bit. I thought the stuff with Goma and his hijinks were kind of fun too. The Ginyu Force stuff was kind of like forgettable. Like I was like, whatever. I will say the head Ginyu guy did do like one energy blast that kind of caught Vegeta off guard, but there was never any like them winning, right? It was never going to happen. So
I don't think we specifically mentioned, I think the funniest gag of the show of the episode was like, the Glin girl was putting the eye in Goma's forehead and it would keep popping out. She would like push it back in. It would pop out and she kept like slapping it. It was kind of literally slapstick kind of Looney Tunes humor, but I thought that was fun. Just keep slapping his head.
That's the most memorable. That whole sequence with her was like the most memorable thing from the episode for me. I am excited to see what Arinsu does if she wins or loses here. I think she's going to lose, but like, let's just see how this plays out. I'm curious.
Yeah, because we know Majin Kuu wasn't even a match for a Tamagami, so he's not like going to be a match for. I might get Kuu and Doo mixed up. The smaller one is probably not a match as a fighter, but then like the other one, the sillier, stupider, bigger one, like he's kind of a goofball, but like. This fight, which I guess is the next episode with Goku, I don't know how wacky or serious this is going to be, because he's kind of a wacky but sort of threatening, kind of Majin Buu-ish type foe. So
yeah, here's how I remember their names: Ku was the first one, and Doo, who looks like a big pile of doo doo.
Okay,
he's the second one.
Oh wow, that's mean.
That's just what I'm going with. Okay. That's Daima. So let's move on to the next show on the block, which is Don to Don. Don to Don, episode 11, First Love. So, Gigi is here and he's moving in, and he comes off very cool and collected it for a moment, and then he kind of goes off and becomes super extra, and he's a goofball. I can't even describe this guy's personality.
Yeah, he's super silly, and he does like these like almost like karate, like hi-ya, type, whatever, like stuff with his voice and with his arms. And he's like pointing, you know, just like trying to be cool, even though he's a goof. Also, throughout the first half of this episode, he's just hitting on Seiko.
Yes. Well, that's like the best stuff. And like he keeps complimenting her. And every time he does, she's just like, oh, you're a genius.
Yeah.
Gigi is a genius. She's very... Seiko is very easy to please when you stroke her ego.
She's easily flattered. And even if she like, she may even realize that he's just, you know, buttering her up, but she either doesn't realize or she doesn't care. She's just like, sure, flatter me as much as you want. Yeah.
And also it probably gets under Momo's skin a little. So she's cool with that too, probably.
Yeah. Like, you know, you get to butter me up and annoy my granddaughter. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Meanwhile, Ira thinks he's a demon. Just another demon that she has to fight because she's sent by heaven and everything.
Everyone's not her as a team.
Basically, I think she pretty much leaves the episode at this point where she's just like, yeah, I know what you're up to. This is all some big plan of yours. Like, you're gathering up your demon army and I'm leaving now and I'm going to come back.
She's going to prepare for Ragnarok while she does a power shuffle out of the room.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she does say that.
Yeah, Ragnarok is a weird like term to use because that's obviously like Nordic, like Doomsday. I wonder if that's what she said in Japanese. I assume so. But yeah, just kind of a weird, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like her whole, like, I'm only helping you guys because of the UFO stuff. I've got to do that with you. But once we're done with that, I am totally going to defeat you guys. It's basically her stance right now. Then we get another sort of, I don't know how you describe it, like teenage puppy love moment with Okaroon and Momo, because Okaroon has to leave. And Momo's watching him leave, and she's just like making all these motions, like trying to get him to do something. And Okaroon, and I agreed, I was with Okaroon, like, what the hell are you doing? And then she's like, you're supposed to say, see you tomorrow. Like, he didn't realize she was prompting him to say, it was his turn to say goodbye. And he even goes like, I didn't know it was my turn. And it's like, you know, she's like, well, that's what we're supposed to do. Anyway, and she gets him to say it.
I mean, it's just crazy sweet of her, and like, I'm sure it's how highly she thinks of him, that they do this exchange of saying hi, like, you know, goodbye back. Like, that's like boyfriend girlfriend behavior. I don't know if she realized.
Oh, it is. It's almost like your turn to hang up on me. No, it's my turn to hang up on you, or your turn to hang up on me.
Yeah,
like, sort of thing.
But it's that kind of like, I don't know if childish is the right word, because I think adults do it too. But it's that, like, you're supposed to know this. And it's like, I was with Ogre and I'm like, how's he supposed to know that? But I get it, you know. But the when he says it, you know, and even before he says it, like, her reactions really say everything.
And it's probably worth mentioning that the context of this is Okaroon is, and he does this, he's still freaking out. He's like worried or paranoid that Gigi is gonna swoop in and take Momo. Let's just, I guess, go to the next scene. I don't remember if this is, no, I'm skipping a scene here, but we'll come back. He, in the next day in school, he's got a very like vivid imagination where he's even like doodling like this paranoia in his notebook, like Momo and Gigi and like on the beach or on vacation. It's like, calm down, guy.
Yeah.
But before that, Gigi and Momo are at Momo's house, basically wondering, why are you here? And Gigi, I don't know if he really gets into many specifics. I'm trying to remember here, but he says he starts seeing spirits. I'm trying to remember.
Well, he said there's a specific demon there.
Yeah, but there's a whole thing with his family, like his house being haunted.
And yeah.
I'll just come back to me now.
That's all true, basically, yeah. It's basically why he's here, why he's seeing Seiko, why his parents are in the hospital. And of course, we'll delve into that further in the next episode.
Sorry, it came back to me. But yeah, they like moved into a new house or apartment, and it's haunted, and they kept hiring like different exorcists of some sort to like deal with it. And what was it? Three of them committed suicide? Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of haunting with his family or house.
So in the next scene, we cut to school the next day. And this is something I kind of like Gigi, because even though he's kind of crazy, he's super like confident in himself, like not in like an annoying way. He's just like, he just has a lot of charisma. The boys in the class all think he's kind of annoying, but all the girls in the class, most of them, I would say, all kind of like think he's really cute and fun. And even Momo's two like bestie friends at first are kind of like put off by him a little bit, but he sits down and starts complimenting them and they're like, oh yeah, you're kind of fun.
There's a moment in this episode, there's actually 2 points I want to take away from this. There's a moment in this episode when Gigi's about to take his seat. He's like, I'm sitting next to Momo or ISA or whatever he calls her. And like, and we are lovers. And like, I don't know if he means it or not, or if he's just trying to be, you know, goofy or trying to brag or whatever. And so that's point one, is he just basically claims that he and Momo are an item. And then one of Momo's friends actually kind of just blurts out and says, no, Momo already has a boyfriend. It's Okaroon. You know, kind of saying something that, you know, even Momo doesn't acknowledge or realize, or she just like, she has this other, one of Momo's friends is already calling Momo and Okaroon a pair.
Yeah.
Even though those two don't see themselves that way yet, really.
Very defensive of the wonder couple, which, you know, makes them good friends, good wingmen, or what say you?
Yeah, I like them.
Yeah.
They're fun characters and they're good people. Then we get the scene that you described a moment ago, which I thought was really neat. I don't want to spend too much on it other than to say that it was kind of fun how the animation worked in that moment where he's doing the doodles and stuff. They kind of play into that a little bit with the animation style. It's kind of fun. And then he just ends up scratching the whole book. He's like obviously very jealous and worried. Okaroon goes behind the school to eat. Momo runs into him there. They have like a little back and forth. He's like, I'm checking up on you to make sure you're not still trying to kiss Ira. And he's like, no, I told you. I was just, you know, it was her and all this other stuff. And then something happens that I could never have predicted in a bajillion years. You know, those anatomical models they have in schools that like come apart and show all the body parts. Well,
yeah,
there's one of those and it's just alive and it's running really, really fast towards them. And when it jumps over Momo, she looks up and sees it has a golden ball.
So I'll just say quickly that this is based on, I believe, a Japanese urban legend about anatomical models running.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So that's why it's like all these things, like that's random out of the blue, which is kind of Denden in a nutshell, sort of. But also pulling from like urban myths and legends and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think I had heard of that, but I'd heard of that after I watched this episode. And I was like, oh, there's more to this. It's like some of the other things we've seen in the show where that are kind of loosely based on other existing yokai or monsters of Japanese lore. And this is one of them, apparently.
Yeah. So kind of speaking it bluntly, to us American watchers, it might seem like, wow, that's just really, really random and out of nowhere. This model just starts running with like no lead up, no anything. It just out of like just one scene, all of a sudden gets switched to another scene with this guy starts running in. That seems like that's very weirdly structured. Whereas a Japanese person, if they watch this, like, oh, this is this urban legend about anatomical models at schools coming alive. Like they'd recognize that right away. So it may not seem as random.
Yeah, I don't know if you got to mention it in the previous episode, but like the actor that Seiko asked Momo to impersonate when she went to answer the door to open, you know, enter, welcome Gigi, like that's like a known kind of like actor or kind of gag or whatever. Like that made sense to a Japanese person, but like obviously made is like, what is she doing? She's just wearing weird shit, but she's actually like parodying like a known Japanese actor whose name I'm blanking on. But
yeah, I think the equivalence that I made was it'd be like if an American person started like impersonating Arnold Schwarzenegger, like most people would just get that right away in America. So like I'm not saying this actor is like Arnold, but you know, just some.
Right. I mean, I think Arnold will be more internationally well known, but your point still is valid. Yeah.
Right.
You know, a very small party would think, well, why didn't they localize that? But I think I prefer it the way it is. I'd rather them stay true to the characters that they're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the joke makes sense as is. It's just there's an extra layer if you have to be Japanese that's supposed to be indecipherable if you're not Japanese.
Yeah.
Also, before I want to jump back just like a minute. Before this model starts running in, I actually kind of appreciate. So Okaroon is sitting back there. He's just kind of working out. doing his thing. Momo goes back there and she's just like, I'm gonna have lunch here because I want to. And I know she kind of teases him a little bit about, you know, I'm making sure that you're, you know, not kissing Ira or whatever. But I also kind of appreciate that she just like went there to eat lunch. And even though he's working out, like she doesn't really tease him about that. A little.
I think she said even she wants to see him get swole. I think she uses words, I think.
I don't know. It kind of felt like it was actually sort of kind of her just to go there and sit.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I agree with you, Seda. I think that's been pretty much the deal ever since they saved each other's life. Like, that's been the thing. Like, she's obviously very much being cool with him to a point where she's, I don't know. I don't want to say, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think she has like a crush on him yet, but she's like being kind and nice and like, hey, I'm your friend.
Yeah.
Let's eat
lunch. In the very least.
I think her body and her heart knows what, even if her brain is not there yet, I think her body and her heart are there. Or maybe her heart is there. Maybe her body's not there yet.
Yeah.
But at least the heart is there.
Yeah.
She just doesn't have the, so like, she doesn't, like, Okaroon, like, very obviously knows that he has a crush on Momo now. Like, he didn't realize that earlier,
well,
but now he clearly does.
Actually, he kind of, but then the end of the episode, that was the whole part of the end of the episode.
Oh, that's true.
Well, anyway, we come back from the commercial break. They go chasing after this thing because it's got the ball.
Long chase sequence.
Yes. Okaroon transforms. Gigi sees this and he's like, oh my gosh, and has to be explained to him what's going on. He kind of picks them up and chases because this thing running really fast. Momo ends up using her psychokinetic powers to kind of grab it and then like hangs on to it and it's like pulling them along. It actually at one point breaks apart into all its pieces, then magically reforms. All but one piece, we learn, because apparently Momo had grabbed its heart and was using that to locate him by squeezing it and listening for him crying out in pain. They catch up to it. It's at like a junkyard. And then we get this really interesting scene. So we learn that the whole reason this dummy had been running so crazy and was in such a hurry, it was trying to get back to another anatomical dummy that was at the school before, a female one that apparently it was in love with and that he had replaced her. And they have this little romantic scene. But what's interesting about the scene, even though it's kind of silly and goofy, is that the guy, the male anatomical dummy, is saying all these things about how he feels about her. And every time he says one of those things, Okaroon kind of has a memory blast and is like, that's me. He's saying exactly the things I'm feeling about Momo. And so, like, he's really being, like, getting a sort of taking those words to heart, everything that this guy's saying, because he really...
Starting to acknowledge his own feelings.
Yes, but, yes. Know. He's acknowledging that and he's recognizing himself and what's being said there.
A big part of this episode, well, we also mentioned that Gigi was there kind of like riding on Momo, who's kind of riding on Okaroon. So it's kind of like Wee Bear Bears triple decker kind of scenario, which is a little funny. But like a big theme of this episode was like Okaroon being like, okay, Gigi's here. He already has a connections to Momo. They have your childhood friend, the childhood crush for me. You know, that's what he's thinking. He's thinking, this guy's known her forever. He's more handsome than me. I should just stay out of the way and just let them be their, you know, a couple and just, you know, respectfully like step away and peace out. Basically giving up kind of thinking himself. He's always overthinking, but you know, that's what teenagers do. That's what even adults do, overthink themselves into dumb situations. But then he just realizes that like when this anatomical dummy was going so hard, trying everything to reunite with his love, and Okaroon's like, all right, I can't be a quitter. Like I can't give up. I'm legitimately in love with this woman. I need to fight for her. It's basically what he takes away from this. So like, it's kind of flips out. He was thinking the entire rest of the episode and being like, all right, I gotta get out of my own head and just, I know what I want. I know who I love and I just gotta go for it.
And so that's the episode ends there. One last thing, I don't even know if it matters, but the name of the anatomical dummies, the male one's called Taro and the girl's called Hana. I just wrote that down because I thought it was funny that they even had names, but, anyway, that's the episode. I thought it was really fun, and I like Gigi. I guess I need to hold my judgment until I see a lot more of him. But at the moment, first impressions are that this kind of character, to me, can really be done wrong and can come across as really annoying. But he actually came out kind of fun, and like, I'm kind of impressed by his ability to impress So I like that. I don't understand why he's the way he is or what he does. I don't understand his behaviors, but they seem to work.
It'll make sense later is all I'll say.
During the whole second half of this episode where he's just kind of, he's literally getting dragged along for the ride. He could have been a lot more like, I don't know, arrogant or maybe like in disbelief or whatever, where he just like hysterical in some way, but he was just kind of pretty accepting about like, I mean, he was aghast at the situation, but he was also just kind of taking it all in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa, this is all weird. And
I mean, Okurun was like had a yokai power. So he was like, oh, cool. That, you know, he could have been freaking out. He was like, oh, sweet. All right. Thumbs up.
Yeah. And like in the scene where when he arrived in the classroom and introduced himself, and it's just like the over the top way he does it, where I've seen characters in other shows where that's really like the annoying guy. But the way he does it in this show is just kind of like, well, he did annoy some people in the classroom. Most of the people in the classroom were just sort of being like, oh, hey, what a fun guy. I don't know. I just thought he had a lot of charisma. So
I will say I'll say two things about Gigi. Is like, one, when he first enters the house, opens that door, you definitely get an impression of him, a certain type of character. No. And then he opens his mouth and you're like, oh, he's a completely different type of character. So that's kind of one thing about Gigi. Another thing, and I think this is a common pattern for Don Don characters, is a lot of them are kind of like belong to particular tropes or archetypes. And you could think like, oh, I've seen this type of character before. I know what to expect. And then you get to meet them and even they may grate on you a little bit. Like Iyer's introduction was kind of grating. There's also another character coming up whose introduction is maybe a little grating. But then you get to know them a little bit and you're like, oh, this character is actually awesome. And then has a tendency to do that. Like characters you first meet, you maybe think they're kind of annoying or expect them to be annoying, and then like just a short bit afterwards you get to know them a little bit and they're like awesome. And that's the show in a nutshell.
It's another aspect of this show I feel that sets it apart from a lot of other shows. I think it would be too easy and trivial for the characters to be tropey, but they kind of buck expectations, and that's a good thing. And the last thing I'll say is that all the characters in this show are just unbelievably extra. Like all of them, they all are overly loud and overly goofy, and they all kind of go overboard at all times. And it's fun. It's not annoying, but it is like every single one of them has aspects of that.
Like they all should be like extremely annoying people. Like, and they are tropey, and they should be all extremely annoying people, but they're all actually end up really endearing. And I think that's just a credit to writers, the manga and his editor or their editor. I don't know gender of the manga, but you know, the whole team that put the scene to the credit that all these characters who should be supremely annoying are actually very endearing.
Yeah. All right. Unless anyone has anything else, I think we can move on.
One episode left.
Yeah.
For now.
And we know, because you've said it before, Crocodile, it will be a major cliffhanger. So
yes, it will.
I'm going in expecting that. Well, let's move on to Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand Year Blood War, Core 2, Episode 6, The White Haze. So the episode starts out, Ichigo's done training. Wow, finally. He's all dressed up in his duds because he's going to jump down to the Sarite from, like, I don't know, a million miles in the air or something.
And a bunch of barriers or some shit, too. I guess that's why everyone's wearing those clothes, because that's why Renji and Rukia are wearing those clothes, I assume, from the previous episode.
I actually mentioned this in the previous episode. I'm like, I'm not sure why Rukia is wearing that. She doesn't normally wear like this.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
This like fur hat with like little dog ears or whatever. I'm just like, what are you wearing? But yeah, they have to jump down Snake Way. Or I mean.
Yeah. Well, they make a joke too. They make a point of it's like, oh, it's going to take you a week. And he's like, oh, I got to get there tomorrow. So see ya. And he just jumps. So. And considering it hasn't been a week, I'm assuming Rukia and Renji did the same thing, I guess.
And it just feels like an unnecessary detail to make it seem like, oh, wow, so long. And so, but it's like, you're not going to take a week, so why are you going to bring it up? Just like, shut up, man.
Like, I think it's the Snake Way thing, like Seda saying. all right. So my next note is that Jugrum kills two Stern Ritters. So Jugrum is the main Stern Ritter who isn't
who are you?
He's basically Yubaba's right hand man, or was his right hand man until Uryu showed up.
So two of the Stern Ritters who we've seen defeated in battle come back, and they both get killed by him, and their essences go into Yuhavaha.
Yep.
And he kind of explains a little bit of that to him. He's like, don't you know that Yuhavaha is the source of all Quincy's blah, blah, blah. And then there's a shot in this episode where he then says something to Uryu, and Uryu has a shocked face, but we, the viewer, don't hear what he says.
Classic.
I mean, Yubaba has been consistent in his lack of care for his minions. Like, if you sign up for the Stern Ritters, you just not only do you not get good health insurance, you're likely just be killed by your boss at some point. It's a bum gig, in my opinion. But it's, I guess, classic villain, not hypocrisy, hubris or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
hubris. Yeah. It's overconfidence. Then we cut over to Rukia. She's flying through the Sarite on her way somewhere, and she encounters this wonderfully named character, Asnot, which every time he said it, I thought they were saying snot. And yeah, this is the guy with the mask that we saw before. He is the F, because his power is fear. And if you don't pick up on that, I don't know how you couldn't.
You're right. It was fear.
Yeah. I think they said it at least a minimum of 77 times. I don't know.
I mean, they even said it back when EF fought Byakuya in the first invasion, too.
Yeah,
but they, like, really hammed it home here.
It was a lot.
I'm afraid you're right.
Fear is a fear, and don't you know that fear is a fear that does fear, and fear is this, and you don't know true fear. And anyway,
yeah.
Well, Rukia is not too put off by this. He's threatening her with being able to defeat her with fear, but she's like, well, fear only works if you can attack a living person. But you see, I'm dead because I used my Bankai power to literally freeze my body to a point of death. To which someone in the thread said, well, aren't they all dead?
Yeah, don't think about it. Too hard.
Don't think about it.
Okay. Well, that's her trick.
That was actually our good friend Greg, you know, who mentioned that.
Oh, that's right. He did, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was technically Asnot who was bringing up, like, all living things have fear. And Rukia, instead of saying, during the Fist No Store, you're already dead, she was like, no, I'm already dead. And then,
yeah. Well, anyway, Asnot has another trick up his sleeve. He transforms into a crazy, super emo version of himself. And he says, wow, but see, even if your body is dead, you're still looking at me with your optic nerves. I can use fear on your optic nerves if you look at me. And then that kind of like gets her, sort of.
Yeah, it's really like, it's sort of like, it's argued like your cells might be dead, but your nerves are not. Like, wait.
I think it was part of what she's like, wasn't it like she thought she won, so she started to thaw herself out, then Asnot wasn't dead, and then in that moment, that's when he passed.
Yeah, there was two different things. There was that, but there was a point where it was like, your cells are dead, but your nerves are not. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't think that's how
nerves
it works.
Are cells. Like, that doesn't, yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter, because even though she's something bad's about to happen, Big Bro shows up, Byakuya arrives.
I guess you could make a point that if she's thinking that her brain must be alive, so, like, I guess that part of her still works.
I don't think you could think about this power too deeply, or else it just doesn't work.
Yeah, sure, but
yeah.
Anyway,
it's a little goofy, but to no one's surprise, Byakuya pulls out what we think is his Bankai. Asnot says, "Oh, I know your Bankai. That's not going to work." And he's like, "Oh, no. So you don't see, that was never my Bankai. That was just my Shikai. Like everyone else who's gone up to the super heaven, I got a power up. And now I have a real Bankai."
Yep. He doesn't really even do a whole lot with it. Like, if I'm trying to remember correctly, he mostly just gives a pep talk.
Yeah, Byakuya doesn't really do much here except Rukia, you know, go get your man. Well, no, not go get your prey. Excuse me, there, that's better. Yeah, Byakuya doesn't really do much the rest of this entire arc, so Dragomoji, he should have stayed dead, in my opinion.
You know, so whatever. Remind me if I'm wrong here, but Rukia was one of the only characters in the show, like main characters, who is a Soul Reaper who has never shown a Bankai before.
Correct.
So this is something that was like built up to in a way, Like, she was one of the very first, if not the very first, Soul Reaper we met, and we never knew her Bankai. Like, she didn't have one until now. So this episode even does a special, like, credits ending, which is basically, this is finally, after hundreds of episodes, showing Rukia's Bankai for the first time.
And it's, to her credit, it's one of the more powerful Bankais in the series. So
there's a lot of like build up to that. If you're a fan, like this is the first time you get to see it, finally, what she's capable of. And it's kind of like a full version of her like death ice ability now.
Yeah, just absolute, like she was before she went to absolute zero, now she wants to absolute her zero, basically. As Bleach does.
Yeah. Someone in the thread kind of said like they wish that Byakuya didn't have to jump in to save Rukia and just leave it to her. Which I partially agree with that. Like, it would have been nice if Rukia could just have all that agency by herself on her own. But also, there's a part of me that kind of likes that, like, this is the very first time Byakuya and Rukia could, like, be siblings in a way. Because they were famously, in, like, the second arc, Byakuya was the asshole brother. You know, he didn't care if she was going to die. So a part of me just kind of more generously is like, you know what, I kind of like that, you know, big brother Byakuya was just supporting his sister for once.
I mean, what should have happened if Kubo was a better writer? Now, you know, honestly, writing a manga weekly is very hard. So, like, I'm not saying I could, you know, necessarily, oh, I could do it so easily. But, like, it is true that Bleach definitely has writing deficiencies. And one of them here is that they should have had, like, your point about them actually expressing their brother-sister bond here was nice. That should have happened, like, 100 episodes ago or something. Like,
I'm sure there's lots of different ways you could have approached it. Like, she saves him or whatever. But yeah, it's a cool moment. And her Bankai design is pretty cool. I mean, Kubo is pretty good at designs. I mean, he's got some really out there ones too, but he's got some pretty cool ones. That's kind of what he does.
Yeah. He hits way more than he misses in my opinion, but to his credit, that's one of the strengths of Bleach. Lots of weaknesses, but the design work for the most part is one of its big strengths.
But yeah, it was a cool moment. You know, she got the credit sequence to herself in a way.
I don't know if that's worthy of a moment or something, like that whole like,
oh, for, like you said, for nomination, but
because it was a pretty big build up and it is one of the more impressive Bankais in the series. So I guess that can be debatable. It might be worth a nomination, maybe not, but it certainly at least comes to my mind as opposed to a lot of other instances that don't necessarily come to my mind in that regard.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to go. So I'll leave the rest of, I think hopefully Sequel will be back shortly, but I'll leave the rest of the episode to you guys. All right. So take care and have a wonderful night.
All right.
Thank you very much. All right. Anything else about Bleach before we move on?
What did you think about Rukia's Bankai?
Oh yeah. I thought it looked cool. Like the look of it. I liked that she had something to do in this episode.
I kind of hope that's not like it. Like that's.
Yeah.
Considering that I know Bleach is near the end, right? Like, is this where she peaks? Like, is this Rukia's peak?
She it might be, yeah.
Does a Bankai, which is sort of like this absolute zero ice death ability, kills off one of the Stern Ritters, and like, is that it? Will she ever contribute again? Like, but like what I was saying, to Crocodile, though, you know, Rukia has never shown a Bankai before, as far as I can tell, or as far as I remember. So, and like, she's, you know, like literally the very first Soul Reaper we're introduced to. And she was one, they kind of held off on her Bankai for a long, long time. So that's why they did a special credit sequence here. Cause they, you know, the writers and the anime realized this is a moment for her as like one of the very first characters you would ever even get attached to in the show. So.
Did you guys talk about the final scene? So
which one is that one again? We didn't.
Okay, so there was like, I'm just looking at my notes. By the way, in case it wasn't clear to people listening, I had to step away for a second. But so we cut to, what's that little girl with the pink hair's name?
It's Kenpachi's lieutenant. I forget what her name is.
Kenpachi's lieutenant, yeah, her. So her and another like woman lieutenant are like kind of looking over somebody who's been injured.
I think that's Uno Hana's lieutenant, like the tall woman with the white hair.
Yeah.
So,
and then there's some like creepy weirdo who's like talking, but they can't see him. And he's like, and then he ends up like punching them and they can't see where the punches are coming from. Even the little girl gets just straight up jacked right in the jaw.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. He's like a new Sternritter enemy or something. So
he was probably shown before, but I don't remember.
No. He kind of looks like a little gremlin. You see him for a moment. And yeah, he looks like a little, like, I don't know, Igor type character.
The pink haired girl's name is Yachiru.
Yachiru. Okay. All right. Anyway, I think that might be leading into the next episode, I think. So
yeah.
All right. But the last thing I'll say, this is a minor thing, but I'm just kind of surprised her power involves ice, because somebody already has that.
Yeah, it kind of feels redundant in a way.
Yeah. I mean, again, it looked cool, and I'm glad she's got it, but I was like, oh, ice, okay. Is that common? I mean, I don't know. All right, let's move on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, the Shimane Illuminati Arc, Episode 7, Hesitation. So, Izumo is goading Renji about being a traitor. So Renji's kind of leading Izumo down a hallway. She's in handcuffs. There's some other guards with her. And she's just kind of, it's kind of fun, actually, this scene. She's just really giving him a hard time. It's like really snarky, the way she's talking.
When I was watching the scene, I wanted to nominate her voice actress.
Yeah.
Because I think her voice actress is Kira Buckland.
I've heard of her.
Kira Buckland is actually one of those. So, how do I put this? Some voices you can recognize like immediately. I think Kira Buckland is actually a really talented voice actress. Some of her roles sound pretty different. Like, she has range. And, like, for example, she's in this One Piece episode that we'll talk about in a bit, too. Oh, yeah. But, the way that Izumo is goading Renji, Izumo has kind of always been like the tsundere, like scoffing, like harumph type, you know, teenage girl, whatever, like, don't annoy me or whatever. But like, she's like you said, goading Renji and like kind of being, you know, like, she's like absolutely pissed off right now. And like, how dare you?
Well, yeah. And she's just sort of like, well, how does it feel to have betrayed all your friends? I mean, you know, how do you feel knowing you're working for the bad guys? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
she's really milking it and trying to get a rise out of him, but he just can't. This guy, I don't know what his deal is. I mean, he just kind of tries to just smirk it off. I don't know. I no longer have an understanding of where they're going to take this character, Renji. I have no idea.
Like, either he's complicit or he is like completely, extremely naive. Oh,
I have a theory though. Should I give you my theory right now?
I don't think he's just acting. I don't think he's like, aha, I'm pretending to be.
No, I don't think so. That's not my theory.
Okay.
All right. My theory is this. In this episode, or maybe it was the last episode, I think it might have been this one, they learn about the fact. All of the people who are hanging out at that fun district eating, there was something in the food that was making them all kind of blasé about the things that were going on around them.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is what's happened to Renji. If like he's been fed something that is making him like act the way he's acting.
Maybe. I just hope it's not like, aha, you thought I was on your side, but I was actually on their side. But haha, you thought I was actually on their side, but I'm actually on your side. Like, I hope it's not just like double triple agent or whatever, you know. I hope there's more to it than that. So, but yeah, during this whole scene, he's like, we come back to this later in the episode. He doesn't seem like has any remorse or anything. He's just, you know,
it's weird. Now, then again, there is another moment too, right after they kind of take her away. He does a thing where he's like talking to some of the guards that are nearby and he's like, uh-oh, here it comes again. And then he like passes out. Is that just because he used his power or is that?
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah. I think later in the episode where whenever he summons his like his little ghost familiar thing, he passes out after he uses it. So that's his, I guess his, the cost of him doing that that summon, which is relatively powerful, apparently. It knocks him out.
Yeah, that is later in the episode, because Izumo escapes in this moment. She actually gets away. She actually, like, kind of tricks him and like, runs. This is when we get the scene explaining to the group about, like, oh, we've learned that there's something in the food in this town that's causing all the people to just sort of ignore the weird things that are going on around them. But then somebody's like, well, why isn't it happening to us? We've been eating a bunch of stuff. And, like, in the whole episode, I think Rin's been eating stuff. And then we learn that it was Shammy's grass sandwiches that protected them.
Good job, Shammy.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't the plan, but it worked out.
Yeah, that's a funny...
It was just a gag in the previous episode to...
right.
Like, nope, I was actually, you know, if that had not happened, things would not work out this well.
And then somebody calls Mephisto for help. I forget who does.
Yeah, I don't remember why they call Mephisto. They're trying to get... They learn that they have to get into this, like, mall, because they know... They learn that the Illuminati is, like, under the mall.
Yeah.
And they're, like, calling Mephisto. I forget if they're just trying to update him or... Or whatever.
No, he says something like, I can't help you right now, is what he says.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember why the phone call was made, but I see in your notes, like, we've talked about before how, like, Mephisto has basically totally embraced humanity, and I guess that includes anime body pillows.
Oh yeah, he's a weeb. I mean, he's got, like, an anime body pillow. I don't know what character. Yeah,
he's totally otaku, and he's got, like, a bunch of other, like, dolls and whatever on his bed, but including the body pillow.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny. Now, I think they were calling because, like, we don't know how to get inside. And he's just like, oh, I'm just much too busy to help you right now. That kind of thing.
I remember he even ends his phone call with bon chance, which I think is French for good luck. Like, hey, I thought German was your thing. I don't know what good luck is in German. But he says bon chance.
Well, anyway, Rin has a solution to this. He uses a special move he's created called Satan Slash. And that allows them to defeat some people and get into the mall. And I think Bond kind of gives them a hard time about the fact that his move is called Satan Slash. It's like, it's funny to him.
It did stick out because I think the attacks in this show haven't always had, like, names. I know, like, sometimes they have, like, summoning incantations, but, like, this would be the first time I think that Rin does, like, yells a name when he slashes with his Satan sword blue stuff. So it was like Satan Slash, that's really what it's called. And, like, I genuinely thought that. And then, of course, like, as soon as I think it, they say it in the show, like, oh, okay, I was supposed to think that was weird.
Yeah, and that's very much like a Rin thing to do, right? Because he's so, like,
yeah, it's believable.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Renji finds Izumo and stops her in the hallway. Mm-hmm. And this is where he pulls out that powerful summoning thing he has, and he's able to use it to attack her and her, like, fox assistants, whatever, summons. Come back from the commercial break, and everyone's wandering around the mall. The mall seems mostly empty. There's nobody there, except then they notice somebody, and that person turns around, and it's a ghoul. I mean, a zombie. At first, they think it's a ghoul, but then they learn, no, this is a zombie, and we get a long explanation of the difference.
I don't remember.
Go into, but... It's just they end up deciding, oh no, these must be zombies.
I think this really accomplishes two things. One, it gives the rest of the class, like, a threat that they need to deal with. You know, they have these zombies running around, so they have to be careful, and these guys are going to try to attack them. And, you know, people were making Dead Rising jokes. Dead Rising is a video game where there's zombies in a mall, so
yeah,
But also it kind of shows, in a sense, that Gedoin and the Illuminati have been experimenting on people doing who knows what. Like, obviously, their main goal has to do with, like, this fusion of the fox demon and humans and whatnot. But they're clearly doing, like, other stuff, too.
I think I don't know if they said this or if this is just me insinuating, but I get the impression that the stuff we learned earlier about the townspeople being in a kind of state of bliss and not understanding, I think they're, like, kidnapping those people, maybe.
Right. Yeah. They're doing experiments on them. So my take is that the fact that these zombies exist is basically showing that the Illuminati is doing these heinous things. And it's not, I don't want to like dismiss it. Like, it's not just the Izumo is coming, what's your last name?
Kamaki
family. It's not just the Kamaki family. Like, they're experimenting and killing the rest of the town too. So they need to be stopped. It's like, that's the way I took it, is like, they're doing these heinous things in their experiments. I did think it was sort of weird. They bring Izumo at one point in this episode, they bring Izumo to the lab and they call her like subject 987.
Mm-hmm.
And I even snarkily asked in the thread, like, why would she be subject 987? She's like their most important subject. She would have a special name or code name or whatever. Like, she wouldn't just be 987, I think. It doesn't matter, but someone mentioned later that the reason why she's 987 is because there's literally thousands of these ghouls or zombies.
Yeah.
And they all have the number tag too. So yeah, we're talking about thousands of victims that these people have experimented on.
Yeah, I even noticed one of them in the mall had a number higher than that. So I'm like,
yeah, there were some in like the 3,000. So like, these people have killed a lot of people, like these Illuminati.
And I think it might have, the number isn't so much maybe the subject, but it's the experiment, you know, like, this is experiment number 3 and experiment number 4 could be on the same person, that kind of thing, you know? So yeah. Anyway. Yeah. That she's like 900 something, probably because she just recently was captured, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway. So Gedoin sees Rin and Yukio are there at the mall and he kind of freaks out. He gets really scared and nervous.
He does this Humpty Dumpty thing where he like falls and like wriggles for no reason.
Yeah.
It's part of his like character design, or
he is such an ugly, I mean, I know it's meant to be, but
yeah, intentional, but
yeah, he's pretty awful. And anyway, but he has a little trick up his sleeve. He pushes a button or has someone push a button, and then the whole floor underneath our heroes just opens up and they end up going down a chute. He captures them.
And that's how the episode ends with them, is they're all in like a dark, you know, place. And they're all separated too. I think Yukio sees something. I don't remember if we see what he sees, but they're all separated.
Yeah, it's another zombie or something, because it's like real big.
It's leading into the next episode, which we'll see more of it. I'm just trying to remember exactly what he saw in this episode, but yeah, they're all separated down there.
Also, we in the final, I think final scene, we see that Renji uses his power to start erasing Izumo's fox demons.
And it treats them as if they're gone. And yeah. I saw people in the thread like doubt, like they're gonna come back.
And, yeah, like, I kind of think so too.
And I don't know how like these demons work. Like they kind of can get like summoned and resummoned. So I'm sure there's some explanation. It seems unlikely that they're gone for good. And like, I don't know the logic, the magic logic or the world logic on how like the summons even live or die in the first place.
Yeah. So it's confusing. But, yeah. She seemed really concerned about it. So maybe it's a serious thing, but I also am like, again, this is another one of those things where it's like, okay, if Renji really did kill her fox demons, it just makes him all that less redeemable, which makes me then question, is it really happening?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then the last thing that really happens that's very important to point out is that Lucifer himself has now awoken. Like, I guess he's been in treatment or something. And he's now up and about, and Gedoin is like super freaking out about the fact that Lucifer is about to do a checkup on him. So and that's the episode. A lot happens in this episode. I thought it was pretty good. Obviously, it's not as good as last episode, but this is good stuff. The zombies feels a little cliche to me, but I don't know. I feel like it just kind of moves the plot forward, and I don't know, had a couple of little moments in there that I thought were fun.
Yeah, like I said, the zombies, it feels like it kind of gives the rest of the class someone to fight, and also elevates the magnitude of the atrocities that the Illuminati are doing. Like, if the Illuminati, like, let's just say the zombies didn't exist, and if the Illuminati was just experimenting on like the Kamaki family, that would still be very, very bad. But it's just a single family versus like they killed thousands of people. Like,
yeah,
that elevates
hundreds of people and thousands of experiments, maybe. Yeah,
right. But so yeah, it's like these guys are, you know, now, like I said, I don't want to dismiss you know.
No, I'm not going to dismiss it either.
It's just, yeah, that elevates their how terrible they are.
Yeah, I'm not convinced 100% that it's the Illuminati as much as it is just Gedoin.
Yeah.
It could very well turn out to be that Gedoin has overstepped his bounds and is doing things that even Lucifer doesn't want him doing. I'm hoping that happens. I don't know if it will. Maybe, I mean, it is, we're literally talking about Lucifer, so maybe he doesn't care. But it could also turn out to be that Lucifer is going to be like, what? You did what? You know? So, and Gedoin was kind of scared. So I don't know. We'll see.
I'm also kind of curious. We know Toto is involved in this somehow. We learn that he is a part of the Illuminati. Like, when's he going to show up again?
I thought he was just kind of like an agent at this point.
Yeah, but, you know, he's got some apparently powerful Phoenix power.
Yeah, that's true. He did. He is supposed to come back. You're right. I just feel like at this point, he's just another player among the Illuminati and not like anyone of super importance is what I'm getting at. So
I just do expect him to show up eventually. I just don't know if it'll be like this season or maybe he'll pop up again next season. He has to be dealt with eventually. So
I would think it's this season because I have a feeling the next season won't be about the Illuminati. Maybe. I don't know that. I guess I can't say that.
I mean, I'm sort of surprised he survived the previous season, but he did. Yeah. So
that's when he became Sandman.
Yeah,
basically. All right. Well, let's finish off the episode with One Piece. One Piece, episode 747, The Silver Fortress, Luffy and Barto's great adventure. So much adventure to be had in this filler. Apparently the first few minutes of this episode is actually canon. I didn't realize that until people in the thread were pointing it out. It's more just sort of like Barto crew stuff.
Yeah, I guess when the hail storm appears.
Yeah, the moment the hail happens, we're pretty much full in on filler now. Oh, by the way, we get the new OP.
I need to see the whole OP because the super cut version we got, it left like no impression on me. I was like, oh.
It's like, it's literally a fourth of it, I think.
Well, these openings are what? 2.5 minutes?
Right.
And we probably saw like 40 seconds.
It's very short. And I'll be honest, I think a lot of people kind of like this opening, but me, I've never really liked it, mostly because I think the animation is shitty in it. Song's all right. But like the animation is just kind of like of this era.
Yeah.
It has the TV quality. And there's like a part at the very beginning of this opening where the characters are just running and it's just like really bad. I'm not even going to hold it back. It just looks bad.
I thought the previous opening was fine. Like I didn't hate it. I did think it just went on too long. Like there was like almost, it was like 100 episodes. It felt like it anyway.
I liked the last opening. I think it's funny. In a flip, I think a lot of people don't like that last opening.
I like it. I like it. I just think it lasted. I just think they held on to it too long.
They used it too long. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. Anyway, this is the opening for the new arc, but we're getting it during this like filler. Anyway.
Now, how long do you think it'll take Toonami to change like the One Piece bumps to not be Dressrosa bumps?
I don't know. You know, they have been a little faster recently.
Yeah, they have been. They have been. I have noticed. In fact, I think there was some, maybe even Blue Exorcist. I think they were showing some Blue Exorcist bumps that were like new. Like, did that happen yet? I don't think it happened yet. But anyway.
So during the hailstorm, a bunch of these female pirates come up on them, attacking them. And they're trying to capture them. And these are the Sweet Pirates, and they're led by their leader, Desire, who likes to eat candy and chocolate. Barto and Luffy are captured.
Oh, that was easy.
Barto is put to work in the mines. He's got, like, glue on his hands. Can't use his barrier for some reason. I know he has to do that, like, hand pose thing, so maybe that's why. And then Luffy's just stuck in a giant silver ball, so he can't, like, move. And then we're introduced to the best character ever.
Bill.
Yeah.
Like, of all the names, Bill.
Not even Captain Bill. It's just Bill. Bill is the leader of the Silver Pirate Alliance. So he's basically got a whole bunch of nobody pirates. And he's like, if we're all, he even says this to him. He's like, alone, you guys aren't worth jack. But when we pool our power, we become strong.
And there's this part in this episode where his pirates are like turning in their bounties or turning in like bounties they've caught. And they're like in like the 60, 70 millions.
Yeah.
Which is maybe not as high as most of the Straw Hats. But like they're like Nami level. Like
I forget what Nami bounties were. I thought they were lower than that. Maybe no,
they were like in the 50, 60, 70 millions.
Really?
Yeah. That's, and I was like, I doubt this. Like, who are these guys?
One of them literally sounded like he was like, duh, I'm a pirate. Like, he literally sounded something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh. Another thing to note about Bill, he has his own unique fillery devil fruit power called the smelt fruit, which I guess he just eats like minerals and then he can form those into metallic objects.
Like anything a forge could make, like a blacksmith. Yes. At one point, yeah, he like grabs two swords out of his chest because he just like forges them out of his power.
We go to the commercial, we come back, and Bill talks about dreams, which I thought was interesting. He's kind of like speaking to the crowd, and he's like, what's your dreams? My notes get really loose here because honestly, I wasn't that engaged.
Yeah.
Bartow comes to the rescue.
He just kind of jumps up out of the floor.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't even like, yeah, he just sort of just appears and just jumps through the wood. We learn in this moment that Desire and Bartow they know each other. They were friends back on Bartow's old island where he came from. Like,
this is where you have to be careful. Like, what if Oda gave Bartow a backstory later? You know, like, you have to be careful if you're giving a character any sort of backstory. Like, that's an established character. Like, do we expect Bartolomeo to have like a backstory reveal later? No, but it could happen.
Yeah, well, I will say I don't think there's any risk of it because from what I understand, the filler writers always kind of get Oda's like check on things before they submit like their stories.
And you can always just say, oh, and Desire was there too, or whatever.
Right. But I think I think literally Oda's like, because I've definitely heard stories, I think, from Oda, where he was like, the filler writers wanted to use they wanted to have a character with a certain power. And he's like, no, you can't use that because I'm going to use that in the future. That kind of thing. So I think he's aware. And if they said, oh, well, Desire is going to be Bartow's like friend from the East Blue, Oda's probably like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. As a viewer, you're just kind of thinking, wait a minute, can he do that?
Like this back, like as a viewer, like it's probably not going to come up again. It was just a very small part, but it's like, oh, everything about Bartow's backstory I'm hearing now, I can just forget. Like it's not real.
Right. Yeah. Now, as this happens, suddenly, I don't know if they're escaping.
Yeah, they escape. Like during this whole sequence on the stage, Luffy just rolls around. So he rolls, Bartow like is on top of him. And, then I'm trying to remember that they're being chased by the sweet pirates, the three girls, and they fall into a big like canyon. I don't even remember like how they're moving at that point. Like, is Luffy just rolling or is he being pushed? I don't even remember. I do remember the three girls have like these water like jet ski motorcycle things that they're riding on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember what Luffy's like. How are they moving? I don't remember.
They all fall into the chasm, and they're being chased by some of the I don't know, Bill's crew. He's got a guy who has like sicky powers, and then like of course we've got like Desire and her team. So they're down there, and that's going to be where the next episode happens. There's a minecart guy down there who has a minecart power or a train power or something.
Yeah, it literally just shows. It doesn't even show the guy's face. It shows like his arms, and he's like puts his arm on like a rail, like a train rail, and it just turns into like a railroad like type of you know, like wheel.
Oh, he, it's like part of his body changes too.
Yeah, like his body turns into like a rail car.
Yeah,
we only see a part of it. Like, and people joke like he's got the train fruit. Like, that seems very specific.
Yeah, that's very unuseful outside of a train situation.
Like, if you don't have a rail, you're useless. So
the most important thing, though, that happens in this episode to me that I think you would find interesting is we did get a brief scene where we cut back to like Bill's like headquarters, and there's this like big headed dude he talks to with like big horns and stuff. When I saw this guy, I was like, oh, I get it now. So you had asked before, is this something to do with the movie? Yes. So this character, this giant headed guy,
yeah,
he is a character from film Gold, which is why we're dealing with the silver pirates right now.
Yeah.
The like filler is the silver pirates, and then that's going to lead into film Gold. So, and this big headed guy is a main character. Well, not a main character, but he's a player in that movie. So this filler was made to coincide with the release of film Gold, basically. Yeah, and that's where the episode ends.
To be honest, Bill's smelt fruit power, being a filler power, is probably cooler than Diamante's flag stiff hard power.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't envy the filler writers having to go from an enemy like Doflamingo to this. Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't really do anything that's going to be nearly as interesting, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, you have to work with something that Odo would never use. So,
but also just like the level of gravitas and you know, amazingness that Doflamingo brings as an enemy, and then we go to Bill, and it's like, oh, okay, it's just Bill.
Three more episodes, I think, of this.
Yay. I mean, on the whole, it wasn't offensive. It was just sort of like totally middling. It's just like, all right. Like, I will tell you the other thing I wanted to mention too, and I'm not trying to rat on it too much, but I will, because why not? But man, when it went into filler, the quality of the animation like dropped so significantly to the point where I was like, wow. Like, you had asked last week, we're like, do you think it'll have good animation? Because sometimes that happens with filler. Oh my God, it went in the other direction. Like, it looks even worse than a normal One Piece episode.
Yes, I noticed that. I think I was about to comment on that in the thread. Like, they shoestring budget.
Oh, yeah, totally. This is clearly like we need to buy time. Also to promote a movie. So,
yeah,
that's another reason. All right. So that's it for One Piece. Three more episodes of Bill and his wacky hijinks. So let's talk about flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
If you said you wanted to put Kira Buckland in there as a nomination,
I almost want to wait.
Okay.
Because I feel like Izumo has to have a moment coming up. Like, it has of something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, but like.
Well, we already nominated her character.
Oh, we did. But not
the
voice.
Yeah, we did that last week.
Like, her voice has always been like totally suitable and perfectly done, or not perfectly done, but her voice performance has always been like completely suitable, never distracting, you know, well enough done, but hasn't had like a moment yet to really like push the ceiling, like to raise the ceiling to like really act. So like she's sort of like last episode we talked about, like the way she's goading Renzo, like that's definitely something that she hasn't done before, like this character hasn't.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of waiting for, like, I don't know, a moment, a big moment for Izumo, whether it's, I don't know, she's got to have a moment soon. I hope that makes sense.
She needs a redemption moment, like a come out and be a badass moment.
Well, yeah, redemption, revenge, where she actually is, like, because right now she's the damsel, and, like, I hope she gets some sort of time to, you know, for her character to shine.
Well, we know that she's almost certainly going to turn into the super nine-tailed fox, right? That's going to probably happen. So we'll see if they maybe that becomes her new ability, or maybe in the very least she uses it during this arc to kind of, you know, wipe the floor with Gedoin or something.
Yeah, who knows?
All right, I want to nominate as not as a best name.
What do you think? Okay. Were you going to say something?
No, that works. But I think Izumo or Kira Buckland is Izumo. We can kind of just put a pin in it and, like, you know, okay, keep a tab on it.
Got it. Too early with Gigi. I don't want to do anything with him yet, but I mean, I've already got a good, strong first impression with him.
Yeah.
He may end up being less interesting as time goes on, but at this first, I thought he was.
Yeah, cool. We only have one episode to work with, and, you know, we'll see. Yeah.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else? I like the scene with the Glenn girl. I don't know if there's any way we work that into an award, but it was fun.
Best character.
She didn't have a name, I don't think. Did she even have a name?
I don't think she did.
Good voice performance on her, though. It was kind of fun. But as a bit part, so. Any worst moments this week? Man, we're really low on worst moments this year, I'll tell you. Nothing terrible happening. Oh, wait, what about Bill?
Let's give him a couple episodes to
fail. Let's just see how bad they mangle him.
According to the Dragon Ball Wiki, in the list of tertiary characters, the unnamed Glenn girl is called the beautiful woman with a weird hat.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That is what is she? I don't know how they come up with, like, that's her official name, but let me screen cap it here. But I was just wondering, does she have a name? And the answer is no.
That's pretty great. I don't want to nominate him, but I just want to continue to say that, like, Hybus has been a fun character as well in that show.
Yeah.
Like, every time he does something or says something, even though it's just a gag, it's always kind of fun. I don't know, but not enough to where I think, like, it's award winning or anything. It's just kind of fun.
I think it's good for now.
Okay. Yeah. We added one thing.
Worst moments. Where are those?
The beginning, and there's only
we have three from One Piece.
I don't know. I mean, we'll have another one here with this filler arc. We'll see, but
probably. Yeah. But, like, I'm just trying to think, in all of Daima, has there been a moment that's just been, like, outright bad? And, like, there are some moments that were kind of inconsequential or whatever, but, like, nothing that was just outright bad.
No, I think overall this has been one of my favorite Dragon Ball shows.
Right. And, like, Bleach, has there been a really bad moment in Bleach? Again, it's like some of the fights are kind of whatever. But I don't know if there's been a moment that's been, like, just outright poor.
That show's got a lot going for it, because it's, like, better than normal Bleach.
Yeah. And then, like, Blue Exorcist, season 2 and what we've seen in season 3, has there been a moment that's just been bad? I think we were considering, like, the Impure King is, like, that's kind of bad. But we call that just a, what did we call that? We have that as
something.
Did we put that as worst? Biggest disappointment, the Impure King, aka Blob Monster.
Yeah, like the main villain of the season was, like, a nothing burger.
Yeah, it's not really a moment. It's just, like, that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah, pretty
lame. Yeah, so I'm basically trying to go through what we've seen in the last couple of months. Like, has there really been a bad moment that we forgot to nominate? And the answer, I didn't think of anything obvious. Nothing is, like, immediately coming to mind.
Overall, the shows have been pretty good. I mean, like, I think we nominated, like, the townspeople from One Piece, but that wasn't a moment. That was, like, something else. Yeah. Wait, I think we did. Didn't we?
I think we gave them a mulligan because they eventually sort of redeemed themselves.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Best power, smelt fruit. I'm joking.
We haven't even really seen it used in...
Like, who knows? Maybe he'll do something really creative with it that I'm not thinking of. I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. I don't know. I doubt it. But who knows?
This is basically, it's like another form of, like, Wapple's power. I just realized. It's basically the same thing.
What could he do again?
Wapple can eat things, and then he can turn his body into those things.
Oh, yes. I remember now.
Okay. So he turns in, like, he'll eat a cannon and then become a cannon. Now, this guy doesn't quite do that, but he does eat things and then make metal things out of himself. So it's very similar.
Yeah, but I think it's good for now.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all we have for this week. Like we did at the beginning when we were talking about the news, there are definitely some big changes coming. Really curious. At the moment, we do not know where things are going to go regarding any new shows coming. So keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully something good.
This is the first time we've had a stable lineup for a while. So
yeah,
obviously the shows don't last forever, so eventually they need to be replaced, and we're kind of getting to that point. But it's after the last several years, it's kind of been nice to have like this lineup for the last couple of months. So,
and it's helped that they're good shows. Like overall, we've gotten some strong stuff on the block. So, you know, it feels like we're back to a good Toonami. And yeah, I just hope some, if they do end up bringing some new shows to the block, I hope there's some good ones. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And thank you for being here earlier, Crocodile. And we will see you guys next week for episode 445. And until then, later.